This episode of La Verdad Podcast is brought to you by our friend Sonia Figueroa of CSonia.com.
You know, Christian, there are times when I'm handing over my rent money that I'm like, man, how much money have I thrown away?
It's true, V-Fi. You know, you want this sense of independence and you move out and find an apartment and everything seems great until you realize how much money you're just giving away to someone else.
I know, man. Purchasing a home has definitely been on my mind a lot lately. And I just have so many questions. You know, they don't teach you these things in school.
Well, thankfully, Sonia Figueroa is here to help. She's an expert when it comes to purchasing a home, especially for first-time buyers like you.
Check out our chica, Sonia Figueroa, at csonia.com. That is www.seesonia.com. And find her on all social media platforms to get started on your journey towards becoming a homeowner. That's true independence.
And mi gente, ella habla español.
You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of La Verdad Podcast. This is your host, Christian, and we have...
B-Fig.
That's coming out better now.
Good, is it? More in sync? More natural?
One time, for those listening to it, one time we practiced that.
It came out really... I think it, like, interrupted him or tried to do something else
with you. No, the problem was that we practiced it, like, at home for, like, a whole week. We're like, all right, cool. I'm being exagerado, but
yeah,
it was like,
I was like, I don't
maybe one day
this.
We were like, you know, I'm going to say your host Christian and then you got to say B-Fig. And so the first time we did it, I'm like, your host Christian.
And there's like a silence.
Oh, yeah, B-Fig. And the other one, I was like, your host Christian, B-Fig. I was like, oh, no, but we're getting better at it. Thank you for being here once again.
Of course.
You're always here. You have no choice.
You're like, sort of. I mean, I have a choice, but I choose to be here.
So, we've been actually, like, I think I say this in every podcast. We record two, on every Sunday that we meet, we record two, sometimes three. We did three one time and I was like, I'm never doing this again. Cause it's such a long day and you get like,
I think drained. April, our photographer, amazing photographer that welcome back. Finally, she's been out for a while. She was like, I need to eat or I'm going to pass out. She's like, do you have any peanuts or something?
So oh, yeah. We were done. The reason I brought that up is because, you know, you said you're getting a little headache.
I am. I don't know.
So I learned my lesson. I try to eat a little bit before because it gets very long and then we get hungry. But other than that, how you been?
I've been good. I've been much better. It's a new year. We were just talking about New Year's resolutions and haters that don't believe in our New Year's resolutions. But it's been good. It's been good so far.
It's definitely been good. I was mentioning in a previous podcast that you probably listened to that, you know, I've been good with the resolution of not drinking soda. It's been hard because it's there. You know, we have the soda there. I think Vanessa's been teasing me with the soda that's right there. I haven't drank the dark soda. I'll say I drank a little bit of 7-Up. I didn't drink the dark soda.
He's still cheating, guys.
But one of the biggest things though is that it's helped me realize that I could do it. You know, a lot of times I doubted myself. And I know it's a small thing, you know, it's not like a big, I'm losing 100 pounds by the end of the year or whatnot. But I think the fact that I've been able to be good about it, and I haven't even stressed out about it. It's not like I've been like, you know, scratching myself like, oh man, I have to have a soda. It's been good. It's worked out. And the reason I say this is because I'm sure you guys are listening to this podcast and saying, dang, he just mentioned this in the last one. It's because I am proud of myself. And I also want to push you guys.
I also want to push you guys
that I know that if you guys are going through a hard time trying to go through your resolutions or your goals, that you could do it. And I believe in you. So do us a favor and like our podcast. Go ahead and share it on social media. Go to laverdadltd.com. We also have blogs available there. We have some apparel too. We're going to be releasing a pin. I know that you've seen it before. We had artist Reynaldo actually rocking it. We've been giving it to a couple of people here and there. And it's the one that says the rose that we have for the Cultivo shirt. people love this so much that we decided to make it into a pin. So that's going to be releasing soon. You'll be able to find it on lava.ltd.com. But if you want to have first dibs on it, go ahead and register for our newsletter, which will also get blogs. And I also wanted to shout out Marissa's blog out there, that she has a traveling blog that you
Congrats,
can find
Marissa.
Online. For those that are not aware who Marissa is, she's always in the background. But she is our production manager for La Verdad, which she started out as an intern and then got into the actual production manager, and she's doing a
officially
really good job.
Officially a part of the team.
Officially, yeah. Ooh, 2018, Marissa. We're hitting it in with Marissa being part of the team, helping us out. And she actually has her aunt here with us today. Lisa Jacino, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good, good. And I wanted to start it out like that with Marissa.
Give her the
because,
big shout.
Because she's been doing a great job in getting people into the show and communicating with them for mm-hmm. a very long time. We used to do it ourselves. And I used to do it, and it is so hard to try to keep track of, okay, this is the person I want to interview, and does it go with our fundamentals? Does it go with the flow of the show? So, Marissa, thank you so much. I have to give you a shout. I'm gonna start giving you a shout out on every show. They'll have a little like
she
face pop up.
So done a lot of work so far.
So we wanted to bring you in because I like to highlight family members as well as people that are doing something in the community and people that have been able to overcome a lot of challenges. You know, if you've been watching the podcast before, for our listeners, I brought in my uncle, I brought in my aunt, you know, to highlight what they've done in Chicago and also to give somebody a little motivation. And I think mm-hmm, that's why mm-hmm. I started out the podcast talking about the motivation part behind it. So you are an Allstate agency owner for over 26 years.
So I've been with Allstate for 28 years.
Wow. Okay.
And I have owned my current agencies since 2002. So 15 years.
And your current agencies are where?
So I have one in Pilsen uh-huh. at 16th and Halstead. Mm-hmm. And I have one in Humboldt Park, which is off of North Avenue in Maplewood.
So in the two big, you know, locations where Latinos are, I mean, mm-hmm. Latinos are here in Chicago everywhere. But I want to say those are the two locations that you will definitely know that there's Latinos in.
Definitely.
And yeah.
Latino-centered communities, for sure.
Definitely.
Latino-centered communities, you said it well. And mostly because that's where we settled, you know, for a very long time. That's where we lived for a very long time. I know that Pilsen and Humboldt Park have also gone through a little gentrification.
Yes.
Which is something that we've talked about in the show before, yeah. right? So I'm sure we could talk a little bit more about that,
yeah,
and
definitely.
how it's shifted. It or perhaps change a lot of the direction mm-hmm. of your business there. I wanted to talk a little bit more about how you got started. Are you from Chicago originally?
Yes, I am. Born and raised.
Yeah. What area?
South side of the city.
South side. So we got Southsiders all over today. Lately, we've been having a lot of guests that are coming from the South side. Which neighborhood?
So I'm the youngest of eight. Okay. And when my parents came from Puerto Rico, like many of our parents that have came in the 50s, mm-hmm. they settled over first by Jackson and then Taylor Street. So we actually lived on Taylor Street off of Loomis.
Okay.
And then we moved to the South Side and we lived off of 55th and Winchester.
Wow. Mm. And that's funny too. My dad grew up around that area in the Pilsen area.
Oh.
Right. I think he said he was on 18th Street for a very long time. And to me, you know, growing up, I knew the Puerto Rican neighborhood to be Humboldt Park and Pilsen to be predominantly Mexican. So I never understood it. That there was a lot of Puerto Ricans that were living around that neighborhood.
Yeah, but we were further south. We were what they call West Inglewood area.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So we were out, and there was a Puerto Rican community. I mean, Visitation Church, St. Basil's Church, mm. there was a Puerto Rican community there.
And any particular reason they went to that neighborhood?
I think, you know, as all of them, you follow family, mm-hmm. and we had a tia that had moved over there, so then they moved over there, and then we ended up moving further south. We moved to 59th and St. Mm-hmm. Louis.
Yeah, which yeah. is passing...
Near Midway.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, it's yeah. around that area, too.
Again, a lot of Puerto Ricans mm-hmm. over in that area, too.
And it's very interesting because it also goes hand in hand with why some Puerto Ricans... You know, there's a lot of Puerto Ricans that are Sox fans, too.
Yes.
And I always bring that up, right? Because yeah. also when I was growing up, I identified with the Cubs. I've always been a Cubs fan. But then I also saw a lot of my family from my dad's side that were really, really diehard Sox fans. And the reason I bring it up is because of that, because they were mostly associated to the South side, and the North side was mostly the Blanquitos, and you couldn't, you know, for a very long time, they didn't live out here. So now, you know, they identify mostly with the Cubs because of the colors and
whatever.
Yeah, the color.
Yeah, the
color. Okay. Yeah, the color. Whatever. The colors keep are going. Like, you could match a Puerto Rico shirt with anything with the Cubs, no. You know? So, okay. So you grew up in that area around Midway. Did you go to school out there?
Yeah, so I went to Curie High School.
Okay.
Yeah. And then when I graduated from Curie, I went to Northern Illinois University.
Okay.
I obtained an internship at the City of Chicago in special events.
Okay.
So we did like the Taste of Chicago, Blues Fest, Jazz Fest.
Wow.
It was amazing.
That must have been awesome.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Going to Northern Illinois, was it a, what, did you live out there?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah, that was quite an experience.
Tell
yeah.
us about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, quite
know.
An experience. well, I'll never forget my first day just moving into the dorm, and I met my roommate. She was from Freeport, Illinois, which I never knew a Freeport existed, and she's looking at me, I'm looking at her, and my hair, it's blown out right now, but it's naturally curly, and she's like, wow, can I touch your hair?
Oh my God.
I'm like, okay. You know, she touches my hair. She's like, where are you from? I'm like, Chicago. She's like, no, like, really, where are you from? I said, my family, were from Puerto Rico. Oh my God, stay here. And she goes and she gets her friends, and they're like, yeah. Oh my God, you're Puerto Rican? We've never met a Puerto Rican. I'm like, oh my God.
Mommy.
You're like putting her on display.
So that was my, yes, I was the display of the Puerto Rican.
That's, you know what's crazy? It still happens. I mean, on my first day of college, I remember I used to dress more like, you know, baggy clothing. I came from Chicago, from the
you
city.
You were like ghetto. Let's just be real.
So you know what the first question that, so I had my roommate was so this white guy, and then these white girls came through, and they were like, are you like a gangbanger? Like, are you from?
Tell me. Ghetto. You have to see the
So it's crazy because that was, you know, just a couple of years ago that I'm getting this question. I'm sure people are still getting this question. Did it get you mad at all, or were you kind of like
no, because I had experienced it.
Yeah.
I mean, when we moved over to 60th in St. Louis, there wasn't many Latinos, so I became used to it. Even when we first moved to 55th in Winchester, I had a really bad experience. You know, it's very little and playing in the yard, and there was a group of kids behind us, and I wanted to play with them, and I went over, and they were very mean, you know. And one, I was chewing gum. No, mentira, I wasn't chewing gum. They accused me that I had gum. I'm like, no, I don't have gum. And the little girl's like, well, open your mouth. If you want to play with us, let us see. So I open my mouth, and they spit at me. So that forever was ingrained in my head, and it was a very difficult time, you know, in Chicago. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, as, you know, a Latina, Puerto Rican girl, you know, we weren't liked by the blacks, cause, and we weren't liked by the whites, right? So we were just like, damn, we want to be everybody's friend, you know? Because when we go to Puerto Rico, what do we see? We see it all, right?
Yeah, black,
you have whites,
white,
blacks, everything. It's like, why is it an issue? And that's the way it was. I mean, we saw a lot. I mean, one time I remember my brother being chased home and going right into our basement on his bike, trying to get away from them because they were, you know, chasing him with bats and stuff. So it was a very interesting time. So, yeah, no, that didn't faze me. Once I got to college and they were like, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm not an alien. I've been here before.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's little things like that that shape who we, what we do and how we react to certain situations. I know we brought it up before in different podcasts that, because of that event that you perhaps don't realize was kind of traumatic till later on in life, is shapes a lot of the way that you think or the way that you act.
And the way I raised my kids
and
where I chose to live and the schools I chose to send them to.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of it too, like even for me, my daughter goes to Catholic school because I went through a lot of stuff in public school. You know, and I was like, you know what? I kind of want her to go and not have to deal with this. I mean, I had teachers that would tell me, oh, you, all you're gonna do is work at a factory, you know. It's like, dang, like, I don't want my daughter to have to hear that,
right?
You know?
Right.
So, being another question though, as going away for college, did it hit you hard as far as leaving home? I mean, yes. I know a lot of us are real tight to our
were you
our
one home. Of the, you said you're one of eight?
I'm the youngest of eight.
Okay.
So were you one of the first ones to go to college, or did they?
No, my parents were very much into wanting all of us, you know, to get our education. Not everybody went away. Most of it was, you know, commuting. But I was fortunate. My mom actually pushed me to go away because I didn't want to go away. And I did go away. My father refused to go. So it was my mom and my sister-in-law that took me.
Yeah.
Didn't want to, like, let his baby go?
No.
No. My dad started bawling when he dropped me off.
Yeah,
too,
no.
So.
No. He so did not.
Did it hit you hard being away from home for that long time?
Yeah. And especially being in the environment that I was in the dorm that I was in, it was, you know, very American. It was different. I mean, whenever I could get a ride home, I got that ride home. Yeah. I went to school with the alderman, Ricardo Muñoz.
Yeah.
So he was off 26th Street, wasn't far from me. Whenever I could grab a ride with him, I'm like, are you going? Are you going?
I was like, no, please.
That's funny.
He was my ride.
Wow. That's funny because I only went to school for about an hour away from here. And I got so homesick I dormed for the first 3 years, for the 3 years that I was there. And then that first weekend, I think it was like welcome days weekend or something like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't stay for the whole thing. I was supposed to go to a workshop. And I was like, you know what? I can't. Like, I just felt like, and there's no Puerto Rican restaurants around Romeoville, Illinois. You know, I think now there's one in Joliet. And I remember being there and just feeling so homesick. And I was fortunate enough to have a car. So I came home and my mom was like, pero si apena, we just dropped you off.
What are you doing here?
Like, what are you doing here? I didn't even take, I remember I was supposed to pack everything, right? You're supposed to move in that first day. I only took a duffel bag because I was just, I didn't
want. He brought like two pair of underwear.
As much as I wanted, and my roommate was like, are you, as much as I wanted to leave home to go to college, I also felt like it was a big shock. And the reason I asked that question is because I'm sure there's a lot of us that went through that same feeling of, especially if you leave. I look up to anyone that leaves the state to go to school because it's like you have no choice. It's not like you could drive home. No, you have to take a, you know, you have to fly. Like her brother goes to in New York and I'm like, man, I don't know how you do it. Like I would have felt
he's a different breed though. Yeah. Like, he's not even like my mom or like my dad.
But I'm not even a mama's boy and I was just like,
so you think,
you know.
Right? That's another conversation.
Another podcast.
I even had my mom, I think my parents, like a week after, bring in a bunch of Puerto Rican food to Lewis University because I kept talking about it to all my friends. And there was one guy that was, he was there in the volleyball team and he was straight from Puerto Rico. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to get you some Puerto Rican food. And they brought arroz con gandules, mofongo con carne frita. We had like empanadillas, we had like capurrias, and
yeah, all
everybody.
That?
No, she didn't cook it. No, it was for Borinquen restaurant back in the day.
Oh, damn.
And I remember that was the highlight of the week. Christian and his ethnic food that he brought, right?
Ethnic food.
Cool. I was like, I gotta take you guys to the city.
Well, it's interesting because when you're in a situation like that, you start looking for people that look like you, right?
Yeah.
And you just all come together. And I am forever grateful for a professor we had, Felix Padilla. Because he would invite us to his home and his wife and him would cook for us.
Oh, that's nice.
You had that piece of home and being that's in great. His home. So it was a beautiful thing.
So did you join any clubs or organizations out there that had...
Hola.
You see, and that's the beautiful part about college is that the Latinos, since there's not that many of us, right? We just kind of create this familia outside
of...
You know, I was part of LASO, which is very similar to Hola's.
Yeah.
And... You create network. Have you been able to use that network later on in life?
We have remained friends. And to me, it's just, I love it, right? Because I talk to my kids about the environment that I came from and yet all that you can accomplish with perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful to catch up with each other and see what you're doing and how your familia is.
So I'm not familiar with Hola. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
So it was a Hispanic organization, like many universities have, a club of Latinos that just come together and do different activities to maintain our culture, introduce others to our culture. You know, we would do dances, bring in bands from Chicago, and just have fun.
That's awesome. That's
it gives you that peace of home for when you're feeling homesick. I'm a big, you know, I like to push that, make sure that people join organizations when they go to school, because that's kind of what kept me going, you know, because if not, I will feel like I didn't have a family outside of my home. Mm-hmm. And because I got so involved with different organizations in college, I mean, that's the reason why I've got the connections that I got now, mm-hmm. you know, because I did a lot of work when I was there. And I pushed that mostly because you do get homesick. You do get, you know, that need to want to feel like you're back home. So right. Those are the best ways to get that little feeling back when you're in college. So DePaul also has, I think.
They did. And then, I mean, I met Marissa through a lot of my Latino studies classes. But my story is a little different, I guess, because, like, I didn't, you know, my parents are from Puerto Rico, but they didn't, like, teach. And I'm not trying to, like, say anything horrible about my parents or anything, but I think because my dad grew up in Humboldt Park, and he just didn't like the violence, and he just wanted us all out. So it's almost as if they shut us out from, like, teaching us about the culture and the history and all of that. I knew a little bit here and there. We'd always go and visit my family in the city, but I was very whitewashed. I was very suburbanized. So one of the reasons why I chose to go to DePaul was I was almost itching, like, internally, subtly, like, itching to want to be a part of that, wanting to know more. So I went to DePaul and I visited and I saw so many people. I was like, yeah, Latinos in college. Yeah, this is awesome. So, because I, you know, everybody says, like, they don't go. And I was like, this is where I need to be. And that's why I went. But I decided, I was like, you know, in school, they don't teach Latino history. It's like U.S. history and all this stuff. And so that's what got me into that was my major. I majored in Latin American Latino studies, and that's how I met Marissa. But one thing I do regret was I only lived on campus for the first year. I didn't get too involved, and I really wish I would have, because there were a lot of, you know, Latino organizations, mm-hmm. and different, you know, community groups to be a part of, but I didn't, because DePaul is really expensive and I couldn't afford it, so I had to move back home, and it's hard to get involved, but I wish I did.
So, I mean, talking about organizations too, I know that you belong to different organizations here in Chicago, Mujeres en Acción being one of them.
So I support Mujeres, mm-hmm. Latinas en Acción. I'm the board president for San Jose Obrero Mission. I get involved a lot with things that the Resurrection Project does, and that's one of the organizations that they fully support as well.
Yeah, big shout out to Hilario, who is from the Resurrection Project, that was on the podcast as well. I didn't really quite understand what Resurrection Project was, and when I reached out to him, I kind of got an idea of what they were doing, and it's a great organization of what they're doing, especially within the Pilsen community and with the gentrification that's happening in Pilsen as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So to backtrack a little bit, you went to college, you finished school. Did you get?
I ended up transferring to Columbia University.
Okay.
Or not Columbia College.
College.
Chicago,
okay.
Yeah. So I finished school there. Loved it. I thought that I was going to get into marketing, broadcasting, mm-hmm. and my internships and things just took me in a different path. I started working for the Association House as an intern in my final year in their PR department, and whenever there was a need and grants and Allstate was always present. So I wanted to work for a company like that gave back to the community. Mm-hmm. And I went to Allstate trying to get into their marketing department. But I was fresh out of college. They said I needed more experience. I'm like, well, give me any job. I don't care. I don't want to work here. So I bothered them.
Perseverance.
I bothered them, yeah. And I started as a life underwriter. I had no clue what that was, but I'm like, yeah, I could do it. And I learned, man, you know, awesome. I learned, and I worked my way up through management and started working with agents, and really was working with the Latino agents in Florida and Texas. And I saw how they were involved in their community. That made me want to come back and open up here in Chicago.
And that's very interesting, because you didn't think about it as just a job.
You know,
you thought about it as, and not just a career, but your life, you know, the way that you want to shape the community, but also it being your bread and butter, you know, how you're going to be able to eat with that too. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great, it's a great feeling where you're able to help. And then you're also doing it full time, you know, and working within the community. Did you open up your first, which one was your first location? Was it in Humboldt Park or Pilsen?
No. So when I first opened up, I wasn't able to choose where I wanted to open up, and they needed an agent in Elmwood Park. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, that's close, I guess. And I stood there only 18 months, though, because they recruited me into management, and I did sales management, and I loved it because then I was working with a lot of the Latino agents in Chicago. And I did that for 6 years. And the thing that I loved about it was helping these agents develop their business, but also working with the staff people, because a lot of them are just people from our neighborhood that need an opportunity. And it's this is an amazing career. It really is. So being able to help people and see them develop, I just loved it, you know. And I then got sent to home office to teach people how to open up an agency or purchase an agency. And how to run it and so forth. And I was there doing it and teaching all these people. And, you know, one of those days, those light bulbs come on. It's like, girl, what are you doing here? Go back out there and do what you love. So I purchased an agency and I opened up over in Pilsen. Back in 2002. I bought another one in Bucktown. I bought another one on Michigan and Wacker. I had that one open for a while, but it was where the Blackhawk store is now. So they moved me way up to a floor that you could not see my little sign, and I was like, forget it. Okay, time to go back to Pilsen. And then 2 years ago, I opened up in Humboldt Park, which is really great to me. I'm excited to be in the neighborhood, and I love the people that I work with, you know, the team that I have. Several people from the neighborhood. I have a girl that graduated from Curie as well. And I just love that, that whole connection of, you know, somehow you meet and you know. And
that sense of community.
Oh, yeah. And even the, one of the ladies now that works for me over at the North Avenue location is kind of interesting because she had called to find out if I was hiring. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, Elizabeth, just, you know, you're my agent. And she was from the neighborhood and had been in insurance for a long time. So it was just great, that whole circle, how you come back. And now she's, you know, working for us after being our customer for 15 years.
Wow. That's awesome. It's a community. What I like is the fact that it's a community feeling. So I feel like when you're helping somebody out in the community and when you're giving them that sense of like family, they're going to work harder for you as well. And then you're going to get a sense of, you know, it's my family. It's like you don't want to fail that person.
Well,
right?
To me, they are my family. And that's the thing about it. And the thing I love about sales, let me start there, is just like in life, you know, January 1st, you have new chapters, right? And when you're in sales, you have these goals you have to meet by the end of the year. So kind of to me, it's like hand in hand. And I see their families as my families. I see their troubles and things as mine because I'm their leader. And it's my job to help them. You know, I want to know, what are your visions? You know, like this week we're sitting down. I'm like, I want to know your personal. I know about work. But if I can help you get to your personal goals, then I know I'm going to be okay. You know what I mean? Because to me, that's most important. Is these families depend on this. This is their living. So that's the thing that I love about what I do, is that I can help them and see them happy. And I love to celebrate their success.
That's great. Now, when it comes down to insurance and dealing with the Latino community, one of the things that we were talking about before the podcast was, like, you know, being, for example, life insurance, right? I think I talked about this with another friend of mine where he was having a hard time, you know, getting people in the Latino community get life insurance because they were so used to living paycheck to paycheck. A lot of times you can't budget in the extra, you know, premium, whatever you're paying for it. How have you been able to shift that, or have you been able to shift that to show them the plus side of having that insurance?
Life insurance to me is, I mean, well, to all of us, right? It's extremely important, but it's more than that. It's creating that overall portfolio. Right away, you know, the government, where you take out a loan, they tell you have to insure that house. You buy this car, you have to insure the car. But you wouldn't have any of that without the life. Without your life. And you're working so hard for this home, for your family. And if something were to happen to you, the main breadwinner, how is that family going to stay in that house that you work so hard for? Because the house insurance isn't going to pay the mortgage. The life insurance will. You know, and if you lose your spouse, who's going to watch these kids? You need money for all that stuff. So we have a gentleman who works in our office, and I wanted to partner with him to specifically, strictly do life and financial services, because a lot of it comes down to budgeting. You know, like you said, living paycheck to paycheck. Well, let's sit down and look at what you're doing. And let's create a budget for you. And there's all kinds of life insurance. You know, there's term life, permanent life. You know, I'm a big believer in permanent. But I tell people, you get what you can afford right now. At least get something. At least have something. And then little by little, we'll work to getting you what you should have. But something is better than nothing. Because it is so expensive. You know, burying people, let me tell you. And that's the thing. It's people don't, you know, they don't think about that. And then when you sit down with them and you start breaking it down and showing them and showing, you know what, maybe if you shifted this, you could save money here. Or if you raise your deductible, you could save money here and you could take that $20 and get life insurance. I mean, there's different things that you can do. So that's really what it is. It's about educating, because people right away are like, oh gosh, I can't afford it.
Or they don't like asking the questions, or
they don't know what questions to ask.
They don't
I'm
know.
Sitting here listening too, and even, you know, as an adult, I'm 26 years old, and I don't know even the questions to ask, or, you know, because they don't teach you that.
And that's one of the biggest issues that we have in our community. And the reason why I think we started La Verdad too was to inform our people about these services and what questions to ask, and where to find. You know, sometimes we're afraid. I personally, I used to be so afraid to go in and ask these questions because I didn't want nobody to look at me like I was dumb. You know, so and like you said, they don't teach you this in school. They don't teach you this in high school. I was fortunate enough to be part of a fraternity where I will ask my the fellow brothers. I'll be like, hey man, I need life insurance, and I just got life insurance because I needed it for my daughter as well. And what do I do? What do I say? Who do I talk to? And they hooked it up. They broke it down for me to understand who to talk to. But if I didn't have that, I probably wouldn't have life insurance now, you know? So the fact that you guys will break it down you know, even looking at their budget and being able to point
them financial literacy too.
Yeah, because a lot of us don't know. A lot of us are afraid to ask. And I know money is a real big taboo thing within the community. That was one of the other topics that I was talking to a friend about. I was like, man, why is it so taboo for us to talk about money, to talk about how much money we make? I mean, I know it's a big thing for you guys
in my family.
To me, it's not a big deal. It's you talk about it so that you know that that person can do what I'm doing or make the same amount of money I'm doing, and I can help them out. But to them, it's like, no, that you don't talk about money at all, right?
So little
issues like that. That's a lot that happens a lot in the Latino community. I know you mentioned that you have someone in the
A gentleman named Jose de Santiago, and that's and I tell people the reason I'm gonna now connect you with Jose, and the reason why I'm transferring you off is I want you to realize how important this is, and I want you to be completely open with him, because that's just it. A lot of people are so like guarded, right, with that they information won't say, with financial. That's all that he does. And it's between you and him, and you go sit over there, but you got to leave with something. You have to have something. You have to plan for something. And that's what he does. That's all that he does.
Yeah. As far as workshops, have you guys done workshops to try to get people to start thinking about these things? Or has it been more on a grassroots, person-to-person approach to getting them to get life insurance?
So both. Mostly doing the one-on-one, because that's when you get people to open up to you. But we do a lot with small business owners, because it's amazing to me how many small business owners, I mean, they don't even have insurance for their business. And a lot of them, especially in our community, it's family businesses. So, you know, Papi, what happens if something happens to you and now it's your kids, and how are they going to run it, and where's the money to help them run it? Because you knew everything. So helping people understand that this is important, you know, and there is a thing called key man insurance and a buy-sell agreement. If you're in, you know, let's say you two are partners and something happens to one of you, she doesn't want to be in business with your family. So where's the agreement that if something happens, it goes over to her and the family gets paid? So that kind of thing. So it's a lot of, you know, sharing of information and educating people. Because a lot of people, when I say that, they're like, really, that exists?
Yeah, that was me right now. I was like, okay.
Yes. Yes. I didn't know what
to say. Yeah, and I feel like it's that we don't know. A lot of times too is the title, right, of certain things, like you might not understand what it is, and you need someone to break it down and bring it out to layman's terms and be like, yo, this is what it means. Mm-hmm. One of the questions that I had was for undocumented people. Do they have insurance options out there for life insurance?
So now, for individuals that have ITIN numbers, yes, yeah, there is options for life insurance. That had been a struggle and something that, you know, Latino agents there in the neighborhood have been fighting for. Because they're paying taxes like everybody else. Mm-hmm. They were able to buy their home. Now they have their car. Okay, they need life insurance. So yes, there is options.
That's good. That's good to know. It's one of those topics that, like I said, you know, especially with undocumented individuals that might not be, they might be scared
sharing
to start.
Sharing information is not something they do.
It's not something they want to do, or getting that information is hard to find, you know, because a lot of people, they just don't know where to go. So the fact that they're able to get covered on that, is there any, what about for any other type of insurance? For example, what are the different types of insurance that you work with?
So we do it all. You know, when I say property insurance, it's not only owning a home, but it could be that you're renting, you know, condo, investment properties. So you're a landlord. Of course, all the autos, motorcycles, scooter, personal liability, which I tell people, especially if you have children that are involved in activities, you need to have an umbrella policy. And that basically acts as a liability umbrella. Whether it's a car accident or something happens in your home, that there's extended liability to cover, because people are so happy.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, here in Chicago, there's been so much going on, right? I had a client who was simply cutting his grass, and the kids were playing next door, and a rock ricocheted and hit the little boy in the eye. So you can imagine the damages, you know, that caused. And you know, thank God he had, you know, coverage to cover all of the medical expenses, but more importantly, the long-term effects that is going to affect the little boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think about that.
You don't.
Accidents happen.
You don't.
You know, you don't think about it. You're just out there, you know, cutting your grass and boom, something happens.
Yeah.
You know?
And I've heard the same thing too with, you know, landlords that, you know, perhaps they don't salt the front of the sidewalk. And someone comes, falls, breaks their leg or something, then they're getting, like you said, everybody's so happy. So they get sued, you know, and they probably didn't have that covered. You know, little things like that, it scares me sometimes. I'm like, man, you know, once you become a homeowner or even as a business owner, there's so many different things or headaches that you could potentially avoid, right?
It is.
Headaches that you could avoid. Because,
yeah, and that's what I tell people. I mean, it's our job to give you that peace of mind. I don't want you worrying about it.
Yeah.
You know, let me show you what you need and let me get to know you and know about your family and what are you into and all these different things. Because really that should then put together the insurance that you need. And I love that. Now I have several agents working with me. They're all licensed. And that's my big thing. If you're on the phone 5 minutes, then you didn't do your job. Because you really need to be in front of that person and really talk to them, because you have to ask questions. People don't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask the questions in order to help them, you know, open up, because they don't know what to ask.
Right. Exactly.
So what does it take to be an agent? Like what is like the criteria?
So basically what you would need to do, I mean, I look for people that my big thing in all of my interview processes, and I shouldn't even say this now because now everyone's going to say the answer. That key answer, right? No, but I look for individuals that are passionate about helping others, because really that's what we do. Our job is to help others, to help them protect what they work so hard for, and to help them fulfill their future dreams, and that's through financial services.
Yeah.
So you know, you need to, of course, we always look for somebody who has some type of background or something that is tied to wanting to be in the sales industry, because it is sales. But you can't teach people how to be nice and care about people. That has to be something that comes from within. So you do have to become licensed. It's not a big ordeal like people think. I mean, it is, you know, stressful, but not a big ordeal.
Yeah.
So you go to a licensing, take a seminar. It's like a a weekend thing that mm-hmm. you take. You study, you take the state exam.
Okay.
And then once you come over into the agency, it's like 6 months of training,
mm-hmm. okay.
of going through all the various activities and things and sitting one-on-one with someone and learning how to do it.
That's great. I mean, it's one of those things that, like I said, if we don't ask, we won't know like how to do it. And I'm sure there's people out there listening to this that perhaps want to do the same thing and work within the community, but also make it a career.
It's constant learning. I mean, I'm always learning. Things change and we have to change, and mm-hmm. it's constant learning. But if you're have the hunger for it and the passion, then I love what I do.
Yeah.
I really do.
What were some of like the challenges? You're a successful Latina. You have, you know, two agencies in Humboldt Park and Pilsen. That says a lot. So what were kind of like your challenges coming, you know, obviously you're graduating from college and, you know, do you know what you want to do? Do you know your vision? And from there to now, like, what did you have to go through? What were those pushbacks? I know you said obviously perseverance is, I guess you can say, gotten to where you are, but what were those issues and challenges that you had to really get through?
I think one of the things I always stress to people is, you know, we all have this passion within us, and really following that passion mm-hmm. and letting that passion lead you. And I've always been passionate about helping others. I grew up mm-hmm. in a home where my parents were always taking in people. You know, you were new to Chicago, vente aquí, uh-huh. tenemos un cuarto, we'll help you, we take you, we do whatever. They help them get to their place. So I grew mm-hmm. up seeing that, mm-hmm. you know, and you're always that helping hand, you know. You know, it's just that's something that has been instilled in me since being young, and
yeah.
I've always wanted to be like that. So I think that helped me in deciding what I wanted to do in my career.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny, when I was little, they would ask me, what do you want to be? And I would say a Puerto Rican meter. And they'd be like, what is that? I'm like, a Puerto Rican girl that meets lots of people. You know?
That's cute.
So it's so funny because my older brother now, he was the one that asked me that question. He's like, Lisa, you really accomplished what you said you wanted to accomplish, because you know like so many people now. Like, yeah, yeah.
She's a Puerto Rican meter.
I'm a Puerto Rican meter. But I think, I mean, you always face challenges, right? Mm-hmm. And even when I was in corporate, I was successful and I was doing great. And yet within me, there was a missing. And it was, mm-hmm. you know, being in the neighborhood and helping. There's, you know, it's funny because my daughter's going through finals now. And now it's like the whole house is going through finals. Because that's another thing. Growing up, when I grew up, they didn't teach us how to take standardized tests any of these things, right?
Yeah.
They sure didn't. So that was a struggle for me, you know, when I was going to get my license and my securities license. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got to get through this. You know,
yeah.
I know I'm smart. You know,
yeah.
I could do
testing
this.
Is so right.
But it's so
exactly,
hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, and talking, you know, I was sharing my struggles with one of my friends who's now my compadre, and he's like, Lisa, did you ever put a timer next to you while you're, you know, doing? I'm like, no, why would I do that? He goes, because they're doing it. And think about it, you're stressing out knowing that clock is on the wall.
Wow, so many different things. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I went and I got me the loudest little egg thing that I could turn and chime, and it helped me though, because now I was like thinking and doing it differently. And the next time I took the test, it was like, boom, you know?
Yep.
So I think just getting over your own fears, because I think we are our biggest, our biggest challenge is ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And we're our biggest critic, too.
I've been through so many different things in my life and have seen so many different things that every day, you know, and my family sometimes jokes about it, because I always put out there, you know, a message, and I'm like, make it a great day. And I always say, I am. And my sister's like, oh, you're always so... I says, really? It's for me. Because I'm putting out there to the world that I am going to have a great day. And no matter what I face, you can believe Lisa's going to smile.
Yeah.
You know, because you have to.
I like that. That's like the heading of the
another
podcast.
Another title, right? It's the title of this podcast.
Yeah, you know, that's a very important message, because the way that things happen and just the we call it in Spanish, la vida cotidiana, every single day that you go through, there's always a lot of negative things that are happening.
Gosh, yes.
That, especially if you go through Facebook, you wake up in the morning and you see they killed how many people over here, or Trump did this, or this person did that. And he's like, oh, it's like a Debbie Downer. It's Monday morning. But the fact
toxic,
that
man.
It is.
That you
it's
have
very
to motivate
toxic.
Yourself. You have to like you push yourself to be a leader, especially because you have so many people that are following you and that are
counting
looking yeah, counting on you.
Yeah.
I tend to do the same thing with La Verdad, you know, where I have like sometimes I feel so down and I'm like, oh man, but I know that there's people that believe in the brand as well and I wanna go ahead and not fail those people. And that gives me that little oomph to keep going and continue working hard. I wanted to ask you though, because the two neighborhoods that you're at are getting gentrified.
Yeah.
Very like all the time. Mm-hmm. It's been the last 10, 15, maybe 20 years has been getting gentrified, you know, Humboldt Park and Pilsen. Has that shifted a lot your clientele, or has it been a big issue for you being that you are in that community dealing with that, with the gentrification?
I'll start with Pilsen first, because when I first went, when I opened up in Pilsen, like across the street from me, it was empty. No había nada. It was mm-hmm. just a big lot.
Yeah.
And now there's all these condo buildings. You mm-hmm. know, you have that art district on the side and you have the university. And it's honestly been a good thing in regards to business.
Yeah.
Because you and a growth yeah. For myself. When I first started there, I would say 80% of my book was Latino, mm-hmm. which I love. And then we started getting in a lot more of a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually been a good thing for the business because it's forced us to grow in different areas, mm-hmm. right? And we just have a mixture of people that we're dealing with. And it's helped my staff and it's pushed them because to me, we're all the same, right? So you'll automatically get a professor or someone asking you about liability insurance, mm-hmm. you know, umbrella insurance, asking you about the financial services. And then you won't have the person who you know is super successful with their local restaurant, that family, asking those questions because no one ever told them about it.
Yeah.
So I feel that it's helped us and pushed us in that we treat everyone the same and we're having the same conversations and we're sharing with them stories of what people have faced because we mm-hmm. all drive cars and we all have houses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's been a good thing.
Yeah. And I like that too, because like you mentioned, the fact that you guys been able to use that to the advantage of talking to everybody about it. It's not just that, you know, you're not getting the same kind of clientele in, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that so now you know that perhaps you just told this person about this insurance and now you're listening to this other person. It's like, oh, he might need what I just told these other guys as well. So now you just became a repository of information
right.
for the community. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that part.
And I feel it just pushes us to
I love that.
To learn yeah. more and be better.
I think, like I said, you know, the biggest thing that I love is the fact that you guys are becoming that repository of information for everybody. And that you're also helping out your whole team to become more, even more successful than what they're at. You know, I think we're getting close to the hour here. I wanted to say thank you so much for coming in. One last question, though, is for anyone that's listening out there and perhaps wants to get into not just insurance, but owning their own business, you know, and you've been there. What is like that one suggestion or that one advice that you could give that person?
Follow your passion. Truly, follow your passion. Except that the first 3 years are going to be your toughest years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's times that you're going to want to just throw in the towel,
mm-hmm.
but don't, because it's your passion that got you to do it in the first place. So don't give up.
Awesome. Now, if anybody wants to follow you or get more information, do you want to share your social media or email
sure.
perhaps?
Yeah. Sure. So you can reach me at lisajusino@allstate.com. That's LISAJUSINO. You can also reach out to me on Facebook. My name is actually Elizabeth, but I go by Lisa. So it's Elizabeth Rivera Jacino on Facebook. Or you can follow our agency page, which is Elizabeth Rivera Jacino, Jacino Insurance Services.
Awesome. So. Lisa, thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, you're welcome.
For sharing this information with us and knowing that there's powerful Latinas out there too within reach. You know, we're here in the Chicago community. You could definitely contact her for any questions or just contact us as well, and we'll share it with you. We'll forward it over to you. If you have any questions, any comments or concerns, hit us up on our email at info@laveldadltd.com. Thank you to the rest of our staff here that's helping us out. April, Marissa, thank you guys so much.
Thank you,
and make sure you share this podcast. Peace and God bless.
God bless.